Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is Prime Time on Money FM 89.3. I'm Howie Lim, and Claire Huang is the Hong Kong correspondent for The Straits Times, and she joins us every week with an update and analysis of the latest from the territory. Thanks for your time as always, Claire.
Hi, Howie.
So from this weekend, we hear Britain will start accepting applications from people with British national overseas status for a new visa that will earn them a pathway to citizenship. This has caused quite a stir in Hong Kong. Tell us why.
Well, Howie, Executive Council member Regina Yip has called for a cutoff date to strip Hong Kongers holding foreign passports of their Hong Kong citizenship. So this includes their right to live, to vote here. So some people like Mrs. Yip support retaliatory measures being considered by Beijing's policymakers. And the thinking behind it is that it should be across the board to affect all Hong Kongers who obtain foreign nationalities via other, schemes like BNO, visa. If this is anything to go by, though, Howie, Hong Kong's leader 2 weeks ago said that Britain had breached an agreement with China by expanding immigration rights for Hong Kongers holding the BNO passports, and it would be a matter of course for the other party to retaliate. So her comments came after Regina Yip suggested that the Hong Kong government adopt China's nationality law, which would ban dual nationality. And the significance of such a move is quite great because many people will be affected by it. There are a lot of people in Hong Kong who actually have dual passports, not just British passports, not just under the BNO scheme. This will also include a substantial number who are active in pro-Beijing circles.
Let's talk about the ringing consequences of that new national security law. China's People's Dailies accused the chairman of the Hong Kong Bar Association of arrogance for suggesting he would seek amendments to the Beijing-imposed legislation. What do we know, Claire?
So Mr. Paul Harris is the new chairman, he had given an interview after getting elected, and he made the point that the mass arrests of 55 politicians and activists by the Hong Kong police on charges of subversion, right? Some weeks back, under the security law, is deliberate intimidation of the democratic movement. In particular, he said that he's hoping to engage the government to see if some of the provisions in the security law can be amended. Now, there are two provisions that say two different groups of officials should be above the law. There's another provision that allows people to be taken to the mainland out of Hong Kong jurisdiction. There's also a provision that there should be no jury trials for national security cases. And he believes that these are all in breach of the basic law, which is the city's mini constitution. Now, the point made in China Daily's editorial was this: those who were arrested and are part of Hong Kong's democratic movement have been advocating changes to the political system for years, but they have never gotten into trouble. In this case, it was only after they organized or participated, the 55 we're referring to, they participated in the 35 plus primaries, basically unofficial primaries that are deemed illegal, with the objective of hijacking the governance of Hong Kong. And so they broke the law.
Some members of parliament, though, are accusing banking giant HSBC of aiding and abetting China's crackdown in Hong Kong. What are their accusations based on, and are they warranted, Claire?
Well, Howie, this is a case of sort of like being caught in between, like the US sanctions, right?
Yeah.
Lenders are caught in between. Some in London have made the accusations you speak of, saying the bank is trying to cozy up to China, taking China's side. That's because former lawmaker Tat Hui, who faces charges here, but fled to the UK, his banking accounts were frozen and unfrozen, by HSBC. So critics are saying the lender has come under pressure to freeze his funds, but Chief Executive Officer of HSBC, Noel Quinn, said the bank had no option but to close his account. And he defended the bank against accusations that it had become a tool for Chinese authorities. He said that the decision was driven purely by the need to comply with local laws.
Also, we hear earlier this week the formation of a new political party in Hong Kong. How significant is this?
Well, this is Hong Kong's newest political party. It's established by three prominent businessmen born in the mainland. They want to occupy this party, basically. It wants to occupy the middle ground to offer candidates for legislative council and chief executive elections. Key leader is Charles Wong Chow Chee. He's one of the three co-founders of the party. That was established in May, and there are 13 founding members. Now, the party hopes to attract 250,000 members. No timeline for this was given. Two of the three founding members are delegates to the Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference. This is the top political advisory body. Yeah? So local political commentators are saying that this party would have gotten the blessings, and it has come at a time when Chief Executive Carrie Lam seems to be facing a lot of pushback and criticisms. We've had her predecessor, Leong Chun-ing, in recent times saying that the top job in the city ought to be done through consultation, as in you elect the chief executive of Hong Kong through consultation and not necessarily through an election. Mr. Leong is now, not backing down. And then you have other pro-Beijing lawmakers who think that the new party will not amount to much because, well, it's new, it's got no proven track record. So if you're talking about funding, people to back it with money, people are not willing to do that with a party that's got no proven record.
And what about the COVID situation in Hong Kong now, Claire? We hear the neighborhood lockdown in Kowloon's been lifted. And also tell us more about these ambush-style lockdowns we've been hearing about.
Well, the numbers are still high in the double digits, and officials are worried because the past few weeks, asymptomatic cases have been at least a third of the cases. And we had our first so-called lockdown, but in reality, this is tied to compulsory testing. They just wanted to seal off this area so that they can get everybody stuck in this area tested for COVID-19. So the first one happened last weekend in Jordan. And then on Tuesday night, the government sealed off parts of two streets in Yau Ma Tei. That's also on the Kowloon side. So this Yau Ma Tei, Jordan, this Yau Tsim Mong district basically is, has got many clusters. So the officials are now focusing their resources in this area. So they found one person infected from the more than 300 in the operation that ended yesterday morning. For the Jordan operation, they tested 7,000 and detected 13 cases. After the first lockdown, Mrs. Lam noted that there were three key takeaways. First of all, to make it sudden and smaller scale. Secondly, to be more aggressive in identifying the virus carriers. And finally, to cut the time taken to communicate test results, testing and things like that. Hours after her warning, Howie, they conducted the blitz, the second blitz in Yau Ma Tei. Now, if what has been said is anything to go by, I believe we can expect more of these operations to take place because she has warned that now that it's smaller scale, for example, closing off two parts of, streets or a few blocks, they can do it very suddenly and they can do it in multiple locations that they would want to do it to.
Claire, in your piece for the Straits Times, you said Mrs. Carrie Lam was describing the city's anti-pandemic efforts as disappointing, falling behind its neighbors. Are these blitz a result of that? What more does she want to do?
I guess in some sense, in part, yes, because the officials here are trying to keep things under control, right? The pandemic under control and numbers have been high. It's not going down. It's fluctuating. So Mrs. Lam basically said in her Facebook post that, she compared mainland Hong Kong, Taiwan and Hong Kong and said that the pandemic controls here have been far from satisfactory. But she did point out that, from an international perspective, Hong Kong actually hasn't done too badly because, the city's number of cases are still low, if you look globally, right? And then you look at the rate of infection is also, among the lowest. So she's of the opinion that Hong Kong is not too is still has still managed to keep Hong Kong's pandemic in check, but she is disappointed. She admitted that there is a lot of room for improvement.
So the pandemic, though, we hear hasn't affected home prices in Hong Kong, though.
Well, owing to a lack of private housing supply in the primary market, basically purchasing power has, gradually returned to the secondary market. So, with buyers looking for flats for self-use as well as for investment, landlords have provided further price reductions. You know, a surge in discounted flats has stimulated turnover in major blue chip housing estates. You know, some people want to, snap like a cheap buy. And then even luxury home prices fell, by 5%, with the transaction volume dropping by 18% last year, as buyers have become more cautious amid the weakening economic performance. But, with the drop in prices, you will have bargain hunters.
Thanks as always for your time, Claire.
Thank you, Howie.
Claire Huang, Hong Kong correspondent for The Straits Times, Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.